I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott joins me to talk about the city's efforts to expand vaccinations to include more people of color. A war of words between the mayor and Governor Larry Hogan about the city's allocation of vaccines continues as the city and state don't even agree on how allocations should be counted. The mayor announced yesterday a plan to partner with Everytown for Gun Safety to track illegal guns coming into Baltimore in a week in which three children were victims of gun violence. Plus, Hood College was founded long after slavery was outlawed in Maryland, but a scholar from Hood has shown that the college has a legacy of slavery nonetheless. Professors Emily Amped and Terry Ann Scott join me to talk about it. First, the news. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're joining us. It's Midday with the Mayor today. My guest is the Mayor of Baltimore City, Brandon Scott. The mass vaccination site at M&T Bank Stadium has been open for about a week now when Governor Larry Hogan made comments about Baltimore getting more vaccines than it's entitled to. The reaction by the mayor and other city leaders was immediate and angry. Hogan repeated the comments days later. The racial disparities between those who have received the vaccine and those who haven't are clear for all to see. What is not clear is whether or not the state's plan to erase that disparity will be effective. Yesterday, the mayor announced a new partnership with Everytown for Gun Safety on a gun trafficking intelligence platform as children ages 10, 12, and 17 were victims of gun violence in the last week. Mayor Brandon Scott joins us on Zoom. You can join us as well. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org, and you can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. Mr. Mayor, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be back, sir.
So the Johnson & Johnson allotment that we're receiving as a state totals about 50,000 doses. Mike Ritchie, the communications person for Governor Larry Hogan, just tweeted that Montgomery County has received its first allotment. I assume Baltimore City will get its allotment soon. The governor also said that the federal government has informed states that it won't ship out any Johnson & Johnson vaccines next week. Do you have any insight as to why we're getting some this week, but we got to take a week off next week? And assuming, you know, the assumption is we'll pick up more allocation the week following. Do you have any idea why there's a pause?
No, I'll definitely go back and follow up to see. We know that there's been issues with distribution, and we'll just make sure. But we are excited to receive our first batch of them. And I know our health commissioner and our folks are ready to get them out and get them to people in Baltimore who want the vaccine.
Dr. Lena Wen, former health commissioner, along with two other former city health commissioners, Josh Sharfskine and Peter Bielenson, wrote a piece in the Post about this allocation controversy, where the governor, you know, even said the unfortunate statement that somehow the city was getting more than we're entitled to. And they said that part of the problem is that the state shouldn't count the doses that are going to the hospitals as part of the city's allocation. There are 11 acute care hospitals in Baltimore, and they serve all sorts of people, both people who live here and people who live out of the city and even out of the state sometime. Do you know if there's any progress in terms of deciding how the allocation is going to be calculated? I mean, what's changed in the last few days after, you know, we've heard the governor's comments, and now that, for example, this M&T site has been open for a week. Is there any progress about how it's being calculated and, you know, next step is addressing the racial disparities?
Not yet. We know that the governor is going to be making an announcement today. There hasn't been no change on that. And I'm grateful to our former health commissioners for joining in and letting their voices be known in this fight. We have to understand, when you look at that, understanding that we have 11 hospitals and they treat people from around the state not just here in Baltimore City. And Tom, you might remember as when I was talking about our COVID restrictions and the extra responsibility that I had here because our 11 hospitals and their rates of folks in there, how they have folks in their ICUs and all of those things, because we're treating people from around the state. We're hopeful that the state, we're gonna continue to push and work with our state partners. We're hopeful that they start to think about those things in a different way. As you know, the health department here under Dr. Giraz's leadership has started to show exactly how we're giving out our allocations, including, Tom, including the allocations that we're giving to our hospital partners to administer to groups on our behalf. We know that the great program that we have with our mobile vaccination and the partnership that we have with them has been a great thing. And we're just hopeful that the state starts to look at things in a different way. But we know and are awaiting the announcement that the governor is making today around equity.
Yeah, he's going to be speaking in Annapolis around 1:30 on the issue of equity. Are you at all confident? Are you encouraged by the governor's plan, for example, that he announced, I guess, on Tuesday about making appointment prioritizations for certain zip codes in Baltimore City and being more aggressive about community engagement to reach at-risk populations and refinements in the technology that they're using to reach particular people who are vulnerable? I mean, these are all things that he outlined after he made these comments and after you reacted, you and others reacted to those comments. Do you have any, you know, increased confidence that the state's plan to address the issue of equity in vaccine distribution is going to work?
Well, Tom, this is what I would say to you. We're thankful that they're going to be doing that focus. I know that our health department has worked with UMS and others to talk about that prioritization of zip codes and how we can work with them to make sure that we're getting to the people we need to get to. We're thankful for that. We're thankful, not just me, just a reminder that myself and the county executives and folks from around 22 of the counties sent a letter specifically talking about that portal and how that online portal and how things need to be fixed because links were being shared. And we're thankful that that is coming to fruition. But we still know the equity thing, inequity exists. Baltimore residents make up 60% of the city's population, but only 6.7% of Baltimore's Black residents have been vaccinated, compared with 17.7% of our white residents. Data also indicates that Baltimore neighborhoods with low vaccine coverage are predominantly African American. To me, this shows that we're having issues with access to the vaccine for some of our communities who are already bearing the brunt of these health inequities, and we know are dying at a much higher clip. We know that the state's distribution process has been inequitable in practice. The state doesn't have a model for equitable statewide vaccine registration. We are still not getting a clear picture about where the vaccines are allocated, as you spoke about. And like I said, the people here in Baltimore are entitled to and deserve the vaccine. While our supply is limited, we're going to continue to work in partnership to focus our vaccination efforts on our neighbors at the highest priority, namely our older adults over 65. We work very closely with the Office of Emergency Management, Fire Department, and the National Guard to develop a robust plan to equitably distribute vaccines once Baltimore receives an additional allocation. And we're hopeful and wait and stand ready to continue to work with our state partners to make this vaccine distribution more equitable.
Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. It's Midday with the Mayor. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us as well at @MiddayWIPR. Mr. Mayor, you are privy to briefings that the rest of us are not. Do you have any sense as to when the lack of supply is going to no longer be a problem? We've got the president saying that every adult in the United States should have a vaccine at least available to him or her by May. What's your sense of when the M&T Bank site, for example, or the Convention Site Center, for example, are going to have enough vaccines to accommodate everybody who shows up?
Well, we know that the president and his administration has ramped up and pushed for the vaccine to be more readily available. My understanding and my expectation is in the coming weeks and months that we are going to get to that point. But Tom, that again highlights the issues that we were just talking about, because if we get to the point where we have more vaccine and it's just being distributed the same way, it's going to be inequitable. That's why we've requested that 50% of the people being vaccinated at those mass vaccination sites in Baltimore should go to our residents. Last night, under the leadership of our House Delegation Chair Stephanie Smith and Prince George's Delegation Chair Eric Barron, there was a joint delegation meeting from Prince George's and Baltimore City, because we know that we represent overwhelmingly African Americans in our state, talking about the need to have an equitable process. It should not be, Tom, where Dr. Geraza and I hosted a telephone town hall on Monday with over 3,000 older adults. We didn't hear about hesitancy, but what we did hear about is folks who live in Northwest Baltimore registering for a mass vaccination and being sent to Prince George's County at Six Flags, and their friend who lives in Clinton in Prince George's County being sent here to M&T Bank. That's the kind of stuff that we hope to partner and work with the state to not have, especially when we have access to more vaccine. We have to fix the inequity problem now so that we're not even further exacerbating that as the supply increases.
And this request that you made to have 50% of the vaccines allocated to the M&T Bank site designated for city residents, that would mirror the plan that's already been in place at the Six Flags site in Prince George's County, where local residents have first dibs on, a certain number of those vaccines. So this is a request or a proposal that you've put out quite a while ago, a week or so ago. Has there been any movement on that? Do you hear from the state, no, that's a bad idea, we need some... We can't do it that way. It doesn't fit into our overall vaccination plan. What is the actual feedback you're getting from the state about that particular idea to say, if you come to M&T Bank Stadium and you're a city resident, you're going to be put in front of the line in front of people who are not city residents, for example?
Unfortunately, Tom, what we have received back now is that nothing. That's not going to work. And also, I would push back a little bit to say that understanding the data shows that 90% of the people that receive vaccinations at the Prince George's County site live outside of Prince George's County. Again, this is a statewide issue. I'm hopeful that I know that my folks will be talking to the state folks again, and I'm going to be involved in that too as we continue to work through the next few days. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get them to understand that. But as of right now, it isn't working clearly. This is not a personal thing. This is just us doing what we and saying what we should be saying is that this is not working. We don't have time for political distractions. We need to focus on the issue. And the issue is that we have a system that isn't working for far too many Baltimoreans and Marylanders.
All right, Mr. Mayor, you are nice enough to come on Midday once a month and answer questions from your constituents. Let's take one now from James, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with the Mayor.
Good afternoon, Tom and Mayor Scott. I contacted your office when you were city council president and as mayor. Emails and the infrastructure fee on the water bills has to be changed because there's an equity in the water infrastructure fee for people who have a meter pipe size 5/8 inch get charged $19. And if it's 3/4 inch, they get charged $35. That's inequity. And it's unfair to the taxpayers who pay for their water. So it's up to you and the Board of Estimates to fix that inequity. I'm calling you because I've contacted your office and to no avail. So what can you do about that?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question, James. And I'm sorry that no one got back to you. And you can rest assured that when I get off of this, I'm going to ask them to look up your emails and see why they didn't get back to you, because that's not acceptable. But what I will say is that we know that a different size water that puts out different things is going to result in different prices and water bills. However, James, for me and what we have as we right now are on the hunt to bring in a top-notch DPW professional to run that department, the number one priority, the number one question that I'm asking anyone that wants that job is how they're going to fix the water billing system, how they're going to make it more equitable, how they're going to enforce our Water Bill Accountability and Equity Act that will actually do the work of making our bills, bills that you can trust, that you can believe in, and that will be equitable. That is something work that we're already undertaking. It will not, it's not overnight work. We know that this system has been broken probably longer than I've been alive, but you have my commitment to fixing it. You can see how I voted on that issue as a council member and a council president. And now as we bring in a new leader for the agency, we're going to be pushing that person to focus on that first as we roll out our new director.
Any speculation as to when you'll have somebody hired? Because you've been at this for a while. It's taken a long time, isn't it?
We're hoping to, Tom, to get someone in very shortly. We know that we're working through the council with legislation around the salary, and we're hoping to get someone here very shortly because it has been a while, and we know. But, Tom, the truth is that what we have seen in the past, if folks have rushed to bring someone in, and we've had the wrong person for a long time. We need to get a top-notch professional that's proven to be able to operate in a city like Baltimore and handle the issues that we have to get that department moving in the right way.
Quick break, then we'll have more with Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott on Midday with the Mayor. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can tweet me at @TomHallWYPR. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday at the Movies with Jed Dietz, the founder of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post. Plus, J. Wynn Russick, our theater critic, will join me with a review of a new virtual production at the Everyman Theater here in Baltimore. And coming up a little later today, two scholars from Hood College join me to discuss the legacy of slavery at their institution. But now let's get back to Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is with us, taking your calls and questions. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. Mr. Mayor, let's go back to the phones. We have a caller from Fells Point. Katie is on the line. Katie, welcome to Midday with Mayor Scott.
Hi, I am an ER nurse in Baltimore, and I just want to say to you, Mayor Scott, since you're our mayor now, and I would love, you have been in the council before that for years. I'm not sure how many years, but I am scarred for life over the death I see in the young people of Baltimore. It's very disturbing. It's very disturbing to see their mothers, brothers, everyone upset. And this is affecting our city. Nothing can get right until you get that under control. I've lived in downtown West Baltimore at Hollins Market for 12 years and in Fells Point for like 30 years. And the violence and the crime, it's so sad. And it's not being addressed, and like you're ruining your community. You're killing these people who have promise and these mothers. Where is the outrage? I understand there's outrage, but it's not ending the violence. It needs to be something catastrophic.
You make a good point, Katie. I appreciate it, and I think you express a view that a lot of people think about. Mr. Mayor, when it comes to your efforts to fight crime, you made an announcement yesterday about coordinating a project with a group called Every Town for Gun Safety. It's a thing that Mike Bloomberg's been behind for a long time. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, let me first start off, Tom, by saying to Katie that I feel her. I feel this is why I got involved in it. This is why I ran for mayor, because only the mayor of Baltimore City has an impact on what the police department does. I'm actually in Annapolis right now fighting to have local control of our police department, to bring it from a state agency into a city agency. It's been a state agency since the Civil War. But we also have to understand, Katie, for me, this is personal. That loss of life is personal because I grew up here. I've been a victim of violent crime. I saw the first time I saw someone get shot was before I was 10 years old. Baltimore has been one of the most violent cities every year that I've taken breath. And what that makes me understand is that we have been operating the same way every year. That has to change. And when I have to talk to the parents and young people that have been victims of violence, it's the hardest part of my job. When I had to be on the homicide scene of my friend who was like a brother to me, Dante Barksdale, it breaks my heart too. But it also continues to ignite that flame in me that we have to be better. And this is the things that we're doing now. This is not an overnight fight. Yes, we know that our police department is engaged. We know that we're going to have them focus on the violent repeat offenders through our group violence reduction strategy. But we also have to understand that we have to build better people and communities in different ways through our Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. But we also, as Tom was alluding to, we also have to address the issue that we haven't. Nearly all of our crime guns in Baltimore originate from outside of our borders. 65% of them that we recovered last year in 2020 came from outside the state, and 82% of them came from outside of the city. We know that we can't ignore that. We have to, and it's going to be my responsibility to make sure our police department is doing what they're doing and every other agency to target and focus on people that are committing gun crimes in Baltimore. I will tell you that so far this year, gun arrest in Baltimore is up 21%. We know that we're unfortunately seeing an increase in shootings. Homicide is down 13%. Total violent crime is down 21%. And that's still not enough for me, because I want to see us continue to value life in Baltimore, building the partnerships with the community. This tool that we announced yesterday will allow our detectives in real time to make the cases on these individuals who are bringing these weapons into the city and giving them and selling them to people that they know are going to shoot people that are going to end up in your ER. We know that. We have known that these folks have been doing that for decades, because there are zero gun stores in our city. And this is just one part of what we have to do to attack that. This is a number one focus for me. I am going to continue to pressure our department to be better, but I will also challenge anyone that thinks that going back to the ways that we used to do things is going to work, because that did not work. Zero tolerance and mass arrest did not make crime go down in Baltimore. In fact, in many cases, it made it go up. We know that we have to focus on those individuals, and that's what we will do. And we'll focus on these people. And Tom, to one of your other points about state assistance, I also have made the request to the governor personally to allow me to restart the Criminal Justice Coordinating Committee underneath my office, because it's been defunct for a few years, because it's not just enough that we're pressuring the police department. We need to have all of the agencies at the table, police department, our state's attorney, the court, DJS, parole and probation, everyone, state police, everyone at the table consistently, so that we can hold everyone accountable, not embarrassing people in the media, not calling people out as things have been done in the past, but having actual partnership and conversation on how we can improve everyone's efforts to make Baltimore safer.
But and let's talk a little bit about how specifically that's going to work. I mean, you talk about percentages and decreases in violent crime, and you're right, as a matter of percentage. What that actually means is in 2020, on this date, March 4th, 2020, seven more people had been killed than on this date in 2021. However, non-fatal shootings, 11 more people have been shot and not killed this year than last year as of this date. And that includes, you know, these three children that you talked about in the media and that I mentioned as well. Tell us about this the overall strategy, the group violence reduction strategy, the Board of Estimates approved $600,000 in grant money in December to launch this program. Dante Barksdale, who's been on this show many times, and as you mentioned, a friend of yours, he was part of that violence interrupting community with Safe Streets. He himself was killed on the streets of our city. What have we gotten for our $600,000 so far? And how does this new platform about gun trafficking play into that strategy?
Yeah, so they're components of it. I'll start with GVRS. And Tom, what I would say is that we are building the GVRS. The approval was just the first start, right? And as you know, the city has failed at this twice. What happens is now BPD is working with the partnering organizations to identify the folks, identify who we're going to target, identify how we're going to build up the resources. Because, Tom, as you very well know, the first two times the city tried this, this model, this focused deterrence model, where they failed was they did a great job, a good job, an okay job of going after people with law enforcement. But we also know it's just as critical to bring the resources for people to change their lives. What's happening now is building that out. Again, that's why you heard me say when that was approved and introduced that this is not overnight work. You can't just go from not having a strategy around the most violent people to having one the next day. You have to build that out. But while that continues, our police department is going to continue to focus on those most violent folks, continue to do their enforcement in the areas that they need, not going back to zero tolerance. And even if you think about the unfortunate incidents that we had, and no one should feel comfortable. And they know that finding out who shot these children is the top priority for me, because we cannot allow people to cowardly do that and exist and be comfortable in our neighborhoods. And I'm grateful to the work that our police department has been doing. And even in an unfortunate case where some coward decided to shoot a 10-year-old, the officers were right there, were able to render aid to one person and able to radio information that allowed us to find some other folks. And we're hopeful that they would be able to build a strong case and solve that one as well. But when you think about the gun trafficking thing, it's a little separate from that, right? It's about doing both. We've been focusing only in on the individuals to commit the crimes with the guns, not on the people that have been bringing it. This is an investigative tool. This will allow detectives, and as we announced yesterday, there'll be a sergeant and detectives that'll be focused on building the cases around the people who are selling these weapons, trafficking them, straw-purchasing them into our city, and also focusing on them and holding them accountable. We are the first city in the country to use and have this tool, Tom, and we know that it's important because we know where our weapons are coming from.
Mr. Mayor, we promised that we'd let you go by now. I know you are in Annapolis lobbying for a number of things on the police front and the law enforcement front. So I appreciate the time and look forward to talking to you next month. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And listeners, I highly recommend, if you are interested in finding out more about gun trafficking, a terrific article in Baltimore Magazine that ran in the December 2020 issue of Baltimore Magazine by Ron Cassie. It's called The Iron Pipeline, and it is an excellent explanation of the scope of this problem of guns coming in to the city. Coming up, a conversation about the legacy of slavery at Hood College with two scholars from that school. Professors Emily Amped and Terry Ann Scott will join me on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.